Look, you know it's a bad night when it's me that has to kick this off. A 3-2 defeat to UCD. So who would have thought the 20 minutes of the stream not working would be the highlight of the night? We have Pingu with us.
How's it going?
How are you, buddy?
Been better, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah. We should have Steph along in a couple minutes, and we'll hear from Martin Conley later on in the show. I just before we get going, it's obviously it's been a momentous day or a momentous couple of days, or will be a momentous couple of days in history. And I think it's a day we all knew was coming. And I'm sure there has been conversations about whether the game should have been played tonight. I know there's conversations about whether a Derry game should have been played tonight. And it's actually the reason Gally won't be here tonight on the show. But I just wanted to just mark the occasion and just say, welcome back, Art Brooks, to Ireland. And we hope you had an absolutely cracking night. And we all should have gone instead of watching that game from UCD. So, welcome back, Garth.
Donald, that is the new highlight of tonight. That was just epic. That won't ever be topped on any podcast. That was brilliant.
Well, I've got a few more Garth Brooksian puns and stuff to throw in, so I might still top before the end of the day. But we'll see how we go. I don't even really know how to make sense of what happened tonight. It was awful. It was bizarre as well. It was a game that we had in our grasp twice and then just threw it away. Crazy. I am genuinely finding it hard to put into words, so this might be an absolute train wreck of a podcast. So one thing, could you help me out? Can you provide some sort of I don't know, just clarity on what has just happened?
Not really, no. Thanks everybody for listening. Let's just play about it. No, I think, you know, we were talking obviously off air, and I got to hear about 75 minutes of the match, or maybe just a little bit less than that, and it seemed like we were home and hosed. Like, obviously, as I said to you off air, that once it went 1-1 and then it got back in quick succession to 2-1, like, we seemed comfortable. I heard, like, when I was listening to the commentary, I heard the lads like on LMFM were kind of laughing and joking, and it just seemed like everything was going our way. I get myself ready to go to work, and I text you. I'm like, was that the fucking result? Was it when I saw it was 3-2? I couldn't believe it. You know, it was. But it's one of them where I feel like we're just in a funk at the minute, and it's like, even not playing terrible, we can't finish a team off, a team like UCD. And like, before the game, when the lads were talking, they were saying it's a difficult place to go and play. It is, but again, when you're comfortable like that, you should be putting teams to bed. And I think at halftime, James Rogers on LMFM made the point, you know, you don't want to come back out for the second half too relaxed and sitting back and that, you know. It's just very, it's one of the, again, it feels like when we played UCD earlier in the season in Belfield, it's just, you're coming away from the match just bitterly disappointed, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think even when you think back, like, when we were 2-1 up, we had a brilliant chance to make it 3-1. And that definitely would have killed the game. I think Wardy had a shot blocked, and it was a bit of a ball was bouncing around the box. We couldn't just put it away. But it's pretty similar to that UCD game. And when we think of how many points now we've dropped, that's 1 point away to UCD out of 6. Now, having said that, right, if someone had said to me, if someone had offered me 3 points this week and we'd have lost to UCD, I would have asked questions about how we got the 3 points, but I would have took the 3 points all the same. So it's just, we got the reprieve of the Sligo points, and it felt like, look, if we just kick on tonight, beat UCD, then, you know, we're back up and running, but we just threw away the opportunity to build on that 3 points that we got. And it's like familiar failings. Like, it's just defensively, they're shambolic, they're unorganized. The back four changed around a few times again tonight without injuries or suspensions, but just with substitutions, and you're bringing Metney on to play right back, and he moves to left back, and Slaga goes to right back, and it's just, they're just not getting any sort of consistency or structure from the back four, and it's leaving them extremely open. Like, we could have conceded another one at the end. Like, we could have conceded four to UCD tonight. But it just, so speaking of right backs, we'll add the world famous right back into the chat here. Your man Stefan.
Yes, I finished talking about tonight's match, I guess.
Yeah. We're waiting for Gally to join the live stream from the Garth Brooks concert.
Oh yeah, jeez. That's the best I've seen Pingu looking in a while.
So what did you
Hello Stefan.
Can you give us can you try and make some sense of what's after happening?
No. you know, like, it's, we're so open there, it's untrue. Like, look, I know even at 2-2 we're probably pushing to win the game, but like, if you're playing a high line, surely you have to be together at least as a four, or if a right full or a left full is attacking, surely you come together narrow as a three. It just seems like they're going off the cuff and just like every man for himself defending there. Each one of them got isolated. Bone was miles off for the first one. I'm not even sure. It seemed to take a bounce before it got to Shepherd and sort of bounced over him. It was an odd one because it didn't even seem like I had much pace on the ball. But he's cut back from Bone, and Bone just let him go. And Alfie Lewis has sort of done the same. It was a token sort of a gesture of attack. I wouldn't even say it was a tackle. He tried to get near him. Your man just skipped by him, and then
you had a look at him on the way past.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, be competitive. If you have to foul him, like, or we're 1-0 up at that stage, don't give them any chance to get back into a game and shut it out. Like, the second goal is, I think, it's a tidy finish, but we're probably too far off the pace as well. Like, we should be closing down. He shouldn't be getting a shot. He uses the defender, puts it through his legs to go in the bottom corner. So I don't think he can have too much to blame. But they had pace attacking us at the back, and like, if surely game management, you should be judging that and dropping a little bit deeper. Like, if especially if you don't have pace in that central area, like, it was 1v1, even 2v1s or 3v2s in their favour near the end there. And you said it yourself, they could have scored four easily. The last time they were up in Oriel, I don't even know if they had a shot on target. They never looked like scoring. They never looked like threatening. And then they nearly scored four tonight. Like, it's the defending side of things, and not just from the defence, from midfield as well, I suppose. It's just fell off a cliff, like, the form. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think it's getting, like, we thought, like, what was a blip over a couple of games is, like, I don't know what the football definition of a blip is, but I'm pretty sure we're out of a blip now, that this is enough poor performances in a row to be pretty concerning.
I think the one thing, just before you move on from whatever, but the one thing, any team I was ever involved in, if you go through a bad patch like that, where you're losing games or shipping goals, the first thing you sort of look at is consolidate the defence, make sure the defence is right, and stop leaking goals. And then you can worry about progressing and then attacking. And I know Stevie probably has a certain way of playing, and he doesn't want to move away from that, but sometimes it has to be adjusted. Like, it's madness to keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. Then, obviously we've lost a few core players that played big parts in it, and like Mark Connolly, the more games goes on, the more you can see how much we miss his leadership, his positional play. Like I wouldn't say he's blessed with bags of pace, but he never got outrun. He was strong, he was commanding, like everything you want in a centre half. And since he's left, you were hoping that Bone could fill in and Boyle could step into that leadership role, especially as he's vice captain, and it just hasn't happened. It's look, and I'd be the last person to stick the boot in players, but when you see the performances like that from the defense, like it's, I don't know if it's they're set up to play in that system or whatever, but they're getting found out constantly. The two centre halves are getting found out like week after week. Like even the Wexford game, like Wexford are struggling to get into the playoffs in the first division, and they caused us lots of trouble. Now, you don't we're in poor form, but even at that, like it's, you know, I don't know. We should be going into the next game looking to keep a clean sheet and then progress it from there. Be solid at the back and hope that you can put away a chance or two that you get up front. But it's just, when you're looking at it, it looks like, it's like crazy. Why are we doing this? Like, and then another chance is created, and we get away with a couple, and it just keeps happening. It's the same cycle. Like at the end they're running through. I thought their third goal was a mile offside. I even paused it on the telly to see, and it's an awful angle. But I thought I don't even think it looked close. Now maybe someone has a better angle of it, but it didn't even look close. But even at that, you know, they could have cut through us three or four more times before and after that. So
yeah,
look, you're leaking chances. It's not like they just hit 3-1 goals, like, and you're saying, oh look, there's nothing we can do about it. Like the cut through is so easy so many times. UCD went second from bottom because they beat us, like the well bottom for a long spell of time. Like,
yeah, their second home win of the season, I think, is what the two incredibly funny commentators were saying. It's obviously not as funny listening to them when you're losing, but for a while they were pretty funny. They're pretty entertaining tonight.
Yeah, even like a 1-1, the commentators were like hoping for a win. Like they were saying, do you know, if we win this game, we'll move off the bottom. Like, and like even that, like I know the commentators, that's a damning thing to say, like, isn't it? If you're the wayside and you're listening to a commentator saying that, so obviously they could see the same things we can see. They were hopeful of getting the 3 points even after just coming back into the game at 1-1, like, so.
Yeah, I think even just to think back on like the first half, that they were fairly comfortable in the first half. They created a couple of chances. Okay, I think I on according to Twitter, they created a couple of chances. I couldn't see the 20 minutes of the game. They I saw the I think it was the Bowes and Drop and Pat's game in reverse for a few minutes, which was probably better than the second half of our game, but there were people asking for Wardy to, like, he wasn't doing enough and that he maybe should drop to the bench and somebody else should come in. And when he scored the free kick, I was thinking, you know, thank God for unanswered prayers, because he was able to come up with one. These were all funnier when it was a win. It's just these fucking pointless now. But Pingu, we were. It's hard. You are still there, Pingu. Yeah, I can't.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. We were comfortable in the first half, which is, I guess, makes this even more upsetting, more annoying, more like makes you angrier. Like, because this is where we should be killing games off. Like, this is, I know, like James Rogers was saying at halftime, like, this has to be the stage where we kill the game off and we just pull the game and then just throwing it away.
Okay. look, I think Benson's a massive player for us. Just even his presence and quality lifts everyone around him as well as that. And maybe we're missing him massively as well. So, I don't know. It just seems like we're conceding chances and possession too easily. And then when we do lose it, it's just a direct attack on the defense then. Like the whole, like you said, it seemed like we were sort of comfortable in the first half and they weren't pressing. But as soon as they started to press us then and they started nicking balls off us, we were in massive trouble and we didn't seem to have an answer to it.
Yeah.
Like it just seemed like one of their attackers was just attacking one person. There was nobody on a cover for him. We weren't walking together. And like you said, I don't know if he's listening to us, is he?
Serious XM, are we?
yeah. He's getting the viewership up. We've two viewers now. Even we just seem like we're playing as individuals. Like it's incredible. It just seems so easy to get at that back four, and the lack of pace in there is killing us as well. Someone knocks the ball by us, we're in the centre there, we're in massive trouble. And look, most of the strikers in the league, any of them have pace. Like, so if you've no pace, you need to take a few yards and read the game. Whereas we'll just keep getting caught out, chance after chance.
Yeah. I think there's we have been talking about the injuries and the suspensions and everything like the last few weeks, and I know we've been missing Hooven there for a long time, which is, I think we all knew at the time that was going to be a massive problem, that when he wasn't in the team, like for goals and for leadership and everything that he would bring. But I think we've probably slept a little bit on Benson not being in the team, and it's a bit worrying because he's been in the team and out of the team, and I don't know, like should have had the stats before I started talking, but it feels like he's not played two full games in a row now for a while, and he's been on the bench and back in. So I don't know whether it seems like he has some sort of lingering injury and he can't get two or three games together. And he would have been one of the ones you would have looked at the start of the season as being like an incredibly important player and like a leader on the pitch, along with Hooven and the other chap that left. But it's just
Neil Fenn.
He's been a huge miss, I think. And even tonight, like they were talking about him coming on, the commentator just saying like he has the bib on and he's warming up and stuff. And then there was a couple of stages in the game where you're like, surely Robbie Benson should be going in now if he's fit. So I'd be a bit worried that he hasn't actually turned up in these games, you know. Not, I mean, like performance wise, but just not physically been able to be on the pitch.
Yeah, like what? Two, three weeks ago, he came off the bench, and you're sort of saying, you know, that's him coming back now. Once he's played a few minutes, he'll start the next game, and then that'll be him again. But he was on the bench the next game, played another few minutes, and then you're thinking, obviously, he's not right. If he's fit, he's one of the first names down on the sheet. So yeah, he's a massive, massive miss in there. Like, he sort of keeps the midfield ticking over. Like, he's playing balls, he's making runs, he's making these clever runs, he's linking between the striker, whoever it is at the time, and making these runs beyond defenders, which, you know, sets the opposition team, makes them drop in behind because they don't want him running in behind them. And I'd say he's a nightmare to play against because I think I played against him, what was it, 10 years ago when he was at UCD, and he was just all over the park. And even at that young age, I think I was in my 30s and he was in his early teens or something. But look, his intelligence is incredible. His football IQ, like, look, we always talked about it. I think he got a bit of a bad rap when he was originally here first, because people were trying to figure out what he was all about. But then when he's missing with injury or suspension or whatever, maybe then you realize, oh, actually how good he is. So look, it's probably a mixture of everything you mentioned. McConnelly been missing, Benson out, Hooban as the focal point up top, and obviously he chips in with his fair share of goals as well. So look, it's a combination of a lot of things.
Yeah. Pingu, how long can we look at injuries and suspensions and stuff as an excuse? I guess, like, it is a fact that we are missing those players, but they have been missing for a while now. So surely we should be able to recover or compensate or recover for losses like that. I know they're irreplaceable players, really, but surely we should have come up with something else instead. That is incredible. Every time I ask him a question, it just disappears.
Yeah, I think...
There's a delay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, like, obviously there's a factor with the injuries and suspensions and everything, but, you know, you talk about Hooban and where he would have helped going forward tonight. He's not going to address the problem and the glaring problems that we have at the back, you know. They were talking on LMS, but just having that vocal leader at the back, I think, might make a difference. What's your thoughts on that before my wife White goes out again?
Yeah, no, look, because I think his injury was sort of holding him back for an awful long time. Obviously, he won't be match fit now, but like you said, the only way he's going to get match fit is by playing games. Even when you see us so open at the back there, And it is to all, you're sort of half thinking, you know, will he make the change at the back, at centre back? Why not? Get that bit of leadership in there. Like, look, Andy Boyle should be experienced enough anyway. He's been playing all season, and look, I don't know, like, not that he should be picking stuff up off of Connolly, because you're whatever character you are, and people lead by calling the shots and demanding of people, and other players lead by example, how to play the game, people follow their lead and stuff like that. But, you know, Boyle should be experienced enough to say, well, hang on a minute. I know the manager's asking us to play this certain system, but maybe we need to adjust ourselves a wee bit, drop that 5 yards. Because if we're going to press, it just seems a bit disjointed at the minute. If we're pressing and then we're getting caught out. So, like, if you're playing the game like that and you're getting dicked the whole time, someone's running you, or you just do something to change it. You put in a tackle, you stop them somehow. You just drop a few yards if they have more pace than you. It's just adapting during the game, adjusting yourself so you don't get caught out. But like you said, look, it's going to come to a stage where it's gone on now a couple of weeks. Something has to change, or we're just going to keep losing games. And, you know, in a matter of weeks, then you could be out of this top three. Pats could easily leapfrog us, and then you're facing into a Waterford game where it's all or nothing, then a quarter final all or nothing. So, you know, it could be a bit bleak. So, look, how is he going to get match fit if he doesn't play the games? That's, I suppose, you're just going to have to get him in. I put him in. I'd change it up. It's not working at the minute. So, his leadership, his reading of a game, you know, even if you could get him through 60 minutes and then bring someone else in. Or, look, maybe it's a change of system and we go three at the back with wing backs. I don't know.
Yeah. They did try, like, he has tried that, like, once or twice, and it's something that you have to, I guess, practice.
I think he's probably tried it in the middle of matches, hasn't he? He hasn't really started a match off well. But even there today, like, look, we looked solid enough up until half time, and then it was like once one run seems to come through us, then it's just like floodgates are open and it's alarm bells are ringing, and the opposition team gets their tails up, and it just seems like they just keep doing the exact same thing, and then we've no answer for it.
Yeah. Sorry, Pinker, I think I might have cut you off there. I'm sorry if I'm a bit snippy. I'm hurt, I'm old, I'm tired, and we were just beaten by fucking children.
Donald, I was just going to say the exact same thing, so thanks for ruining that.
I'm so sorry.
Rather than dwell upon the match, because I think it's just going to get more and more depressing, should we move on? Obviously, I done an interview with Martin Connolly last night. I'd say Martin's happy that it's being done pre-record, not live after that. But yeah, do you want to play that, Donald?
Delighted to welcome on the Chief Operating Officer, Martin Connolly, back on the podcast tonight. How's it going, Martin? How are you?
All good, Pinker.
There we go. It's the second time of asking. If anybody's watching this live, they'll be laughing at us. But look, it's as formal as we're going to get, Martin, anyway. But look, I think it was, we've obviously, you know, you were on another podcast last week, Martin, on the press box and their live show, talking about things that are happening. There seems to be a lot happening around the club behind the scenes, as well as what can only be described as a successful season on the pitch, in comparison to what we went through last year, you know. So I think it was important to get you back on. We got you on just after the kind of takeover had happened, or in around that time last year. So first of all, I suppose just a general question for you, Martin. How do you feel things have been going this season?
Yeah, it's been a wee bit hectic. You know, I think people sometimes forget that Stevie took over and we only had, you know, five or six players signed for the season. I think what he's done on the pitch is remarkable, you know, and I think people sometimes forget that. You know, we all read the social media posts and we all read what's going on. And I think sometimes you just love to contact individual people and say, do you actually realise where we were and what we're trying to do, you know? And I think if you can take that into consideration, where we are is absolutely amazing, and we're delighted to be there. But there's still work to do, you know. There's still a lot of work. On Stevie would never be satisfied. He probably copies one of his predecessors in that, and that he's never happy, and he sets high standards, and you know, that's what you expect from him. And but we've an awful lot to do off the pitch as well, and to improve standards, because we're not stupid enough to say that we have everything right, because we don't. And we've had a bit of luck this week with 3 points from the Sligo game, and we'll take it and we'll move on, and hopefully we can continue in the vein that we have been.
Yeah, no, it's been great to see, and I think one of the biggest things, and we've mentioned it, I think we mentioned it even last year on the pod that, you know, the community aspect of the club, that identity was lost over the last couple of seasons in particular, and it's great to see that back. And how important is it for you, in your role as the Chief Operating Officer, you know, to have, I saw there was an event, was it last week or the week before, on the Sunday in the pitch, you know, how important is it to have the likes of that, to have the summer camps, you know, back and being advertised, not just being kind of hidden away, and having the community feel back into the club?
You won't survive. The League of Ireland club won't survive in the world that it is it now, because you won't attract sponsors if you're not community based. You know, you go and talk to people who want to sponsor you, and the first word they mention is community. So the fact that you've strong social media presence and you're strong in your community is a vital cog in getting sponsorship. But you know, you can do that and it can be a box ticker, or you can do it and it can be effective. And it was a very important part of taking over the club that we had got to be a community-based football club, and we had to mean it. And some of the stuff we've done this year, I think by all standards, has been really, really good. You know, starting off with Women's Aid, then the collection for Ukraine, going on to the MND jersey, which was incredible. And the open day last week with Inclusion Loud, which was, you know, really, it would really make you realise how lucky you are in life, you know. And you know, I know we're going to be talking about the mental health and well-being initiative, but that is part of it as well. And it's a vital part of the club now. And it's another aspect that's only starting, I think. And if we're serious about growing as a football club. And I did say this last week, and I know we're going to be talking about the survey, and it is part of it as well. But community, you know, facilities, social inclusion, sustainability, all that sort of stuff is now going to be as vital as what's going on the football pitch.
And as I say, it's been absolutely amazing to see it back up and going and back at the forefront of everything that's going on. And we will get to the mental health and wellbeing program a little bit later. But you touched on there, Martin, the club survey that's going to be coming out. I think it was last week as well that, you know, the email came out for people to express their interest in being involved in that survey. So could you give any of our listeners a little bit of insight into what that's going to entail from the end? Is it going to be very broad? Is it going to be mostly based on the off the pitch stuff that happens around the club, or is it going to entail some of what happens on the pitch as well?
No, I don't think it'd be too, you know, you can't really do a survey of what goes on the pitch, because, you know, that's Stevie's baby, and if we start telling managers what to do and who to pick and all that sort of stuff, that's, you know, you're going to walk into trouble, as Thomas.
You're not putting the telephone in the.
We'll see how that goes.
We'll not talk about that.
No, the survey is basically going to cover everything that is important around the club. We did say when we took over that, you know, we're going to use the first year or so to sort of review everything at what goes. And when you're dealing with Oriel Park, as you know, Pingu, if you just want to have a survey with people, you will just live and die on facilities and the stadium. And we know that. And that's fine. It is really important. But when we want people's opinion, like, it's okay saying we want to talk about the stadium, but do you want a new stadium or do you want to redevelop Oriel Park? You know, do you want a stadium that covers, ticks all the boxes at this stage? Do we want a stadium that is just really covered area all round, or do you want one that's going to be, will hold all the games for group stages of Europa League? Because they're one's there and the other one's there, like, you know, so,
yeah.
And we have to ask the question. I think, you know, and I have my own opinions on this, that people at this stage could be just happy with covering all the areas and having it nice for families and nice to improve the experience on a Friday night. But we'll see. That's my opinion, you know, but what we've said to people all along, we want to get this message out, and it's part of the reason why I'm on here tonight when you ask me, is because if we're going to do a survey, there is no point having a survey in Oriel Park that takes you 2 minutes on your mobile phone, because it won't cover everything. So yeah, we're warning people that when we put the survey out, register for it, we'll get the survey to you. It's going to take you 10 or 15 minutes to fill it in, because it covers a lot of different areas, and that's what we want. So we're warning people, sit down at your laptop or whatever and be prepared to answer the questions as honestly as you can. And when we get the information, you know, we look at it and we'll decipher it, and we'll have an open evening, or we'll have something, we'll do up some report, and we'll tell you what you've told us. And then it's how we go forward after that is the next stage.
No, that makes total sense. And I suppose you touched obviously on the stadium's going to be, I think every year it becomes a big topic of conversation, as you know, since you went into your position way back when, you know, I think every year it comes up. But is it something that, you know, again, and I don't like harping back to previous owners or previous things, but last year there was a committee set up, you know, under the previous regime for ground development. Is that still going under the current regime, or is that gone away right now? Because that's something that, you know, I've just seen it coming up again in the last couple of weeks when we've been on telly. It's being discussed again, whatever happened with that group. Is that going on in the current regime?
I think we could talk about facilities, and again, you know, we could take up 5 year programmes on facilities.
Yeah.
But I think every other League of Ireland club except Shamrock Rovers and Derry City could do the same. So, yeah, you know, it's unfair to just say that the problem club in the league is Dundalk Football Club. It's not. You know, the facilities in Finn Harps aren't great. The facilities in Tulka Park aren't. The facilities in Daly. We can go on and on and on. But where to go back to your initial question, is there we have a committee in Oriel Park that looks at the maintenance of Oriel Park, and that we have had meetings about, you know, different areas of things you could do and how to do it. And we have spoken with the FAI about possible funding. But when I was there the last time, you still had those meetings. You know, I'm sure somebody last year had those meetings, and that's all you are. It's like, you know, we can have a strategy all you want, but unless it's properly planned and properly funded, it's only a piece of paper, you know. So no, let's get the information in. Let's see where we can go. We can still have and people can have a say in what they would like to see, and then we'll look at all the committees you want. But there is, we're not sitting on our hands. We do look at different opportunities. We do talk to politicians, lots of them, to see where the opportunities are, and they'll all tell you at the same thing. It's very, very tough at the moment to go and look for funding anywhere. But the other thing they'll tell you is that you need a plan. There has to be some sort of idea and some sort of plan, and this is the start of it.
Yeah. And I think, like, we've mentioned it again, you know, over the last year and a half that we've been running the podcast, is if it's something that supporters want, Martin, and you might agree with this or you might not agree with what I'm about to say, but if it's something that supporters want, I feel personally, and we've discussed this at length on the podcast over the last while, but I think supporters need to, you know, as a support, let's say, for example, the supporters group, the 1903, they should be putting money towards the ground investment too, because it shouldn't just be up to the current owners, because at some stage, Stats Boards and Andy Connolly aren't going to own Dundalk. You know, they're not going to own it forever. So it has, supporters have to play their part as well as the funding that's gotten, well, right.
You know, it's good that you've led on to that. We had a very good meeting with the 1903 club last week, with Brendan and Jerry and a few others of the committee, and it was very open and very honest. And I think Brendan would share that opinion, which is that it's not on the responsibility of one owner, be it Stats Sports, Andy Connolly, or Peak Six, to go in there and spend 20 or 30 million. Not, I don't think anybody could, on a stadium. He thinks it's the responsibility of everybody. And that's what I'm saying. Let's get the survey in. Let's get different opinions. And let's then see, could we put together a committee of like-minded people who could really get this project off the ground? And that, exactly what you're saying, so that it doesn't really matter who's the owner of Dundalk Football Club, that the project is ongoing. It's there's a name there and a target, and we want to get to that target.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, look, just one quick question in the short term, and again, I'm only saying this, everything I'm saying is just because this came up in the last week or so since the game is on telly. I was listening, you know, obviously to a couple other more general League of Ireland podcasts, but the pitch has come up, and again, that's something, and I'm sure you're sick.
I do want to explain that the pitch wasn't at its best last week because it was tested for its UEFA certificate. Mm-hmm. And it did mean that the week or two leading up to it, there was a wee bit of work needed, which takes the rubber to the top and more rubber added. So where people might have been, I actually thought it played all right. I see it every day. So that was the reason why there was a wee bit more black or rubber on the top. And it's nothing to do with the condition of the pitch or anything like that. It was that it was being prepared for test. That's all.
Yeah, and I think what's funny is it can look bad, but it can play well. You know what I can wear?
I have to be honest with you, Pingu. You remember this 10 years ago? Everybody and their mother gave out about that pitch. I don't hear that anymore. I think it's because it's an age thing that people have grown up now playing on it.
Yeah,
and they just get on with it. 10 years ago, everybody was giving out about the AstroTurf pitch. Most League of Ireland clubs now probably train twice a week on an AstroTurf pitch before they go on grass. All the kids going up in underage football now, as you'd know, over in Coot Hill and that, they'd be playing on AstroTurf pitches. It's no big deal anymore.
Yeah,
you know, and I hear less and less criticism of it. You
know? Yeah, no, it's funny, just the criticism that I did hear this week was how it looks, you know, and that seems to be what it is. It's not about how it plays.
Well, hopefully I've explained a wee bit of that.
No, that's perfect. I suppose just touching then on the underage structures, everything seems to be going well in the club there, both on the male and female side, isn't it? You know, I think
but you love that because we've a few young fellas from over your neck of the woods, not Chicago now. But
I didn't want to mention Sam Mullen, you know,
who are doing really well. Listen, we're delighted with the way it's going. It's taken a wee bit of work. Derek Boyle has gone in there as academy director, and he's been great. All the managers have been top class. Tiernan with the 19s, Tiernan and Griff with the 19s, Connor Woods with the 17s, and Kevin Beggy Simon Kelly, Derek Delaney with the 15s, and Harry and the boys, and you know, Grimesy helping out there with the 14s, and it's been really good. And you know, well, you know, it's not as you know, again, you know, academy and underage football is not a short-term project. It's a long-term project that, you know, takes a lot of money, takes a lot of time, and you may get reward out of it, you may not. But I think, you know, when you see Ryan coming through, he's been brilliant for the last couple of weeks, and he's put in a really great couple of months. We've Senan Mullen, who's coming through, one of your guys from over in Coot Hill, 17-year-old who's playing under 19s international. We have Luke Mulligan, another guy from he's not just your neck of the woods, but nearly Monaghan, over by Monaghan, under 15 international. Now he's going to be, he's only 14, and he's been called into the under 16 squad, and you know, stuff like that, like that's really, really good. And you can see the hard work paying off.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And then, you know, touching on the women's side as well, obviously, when you say it's a long term project, it's great to see the under 17s are doing very well with Jason McConville in there this season as well. And
I think what you'll see going forward is that women's football is a vital part of any League of Ireland club and any football club. You know, you can see a report that UEFA done recently on the success of the Euros in the UK and the commercial value that women's football and the commercial value of it to the sport and the opportunities that are there for sponsors. And it's mind blowing figures, like, you know, that and the potential that's there for it. From a community point of view and an inclusive point of view, it's something that needs to be done. Our problem, and this can go back to the pitch as well, is we need to look at facilities. You know, we've now six underage teams. You know, in the next year or two, we want an under 19 girls team. In the next 5 years or 3 to 5 years, we want a women's senior team. Something has to give. We're busting at the seams at the moment. And that's why we've been very lucky that Glenmuir here in the town let us use their pitch for a couple of the women's games around the 14 or 15. We hope that we'll keep talking to them, that we make that a more permanent arrangement, and that we can work closer with them on it.
That's brilliant. And it's great to be working with clubs in the local community too, because that only helps build relations as players are coming through, you know. But I suppose, Martin, look, as we wind this down, because I'm well aware it's late.
You have to go collect the child.
I have to go collect the child too. And I don't want to talk anymore about the women's game, because Gally was texting me earlier telling me to make sure that I ask you to give me a job if the women's stuff starts taking off. And I thought I'd get through a full chat with you without bringing that up. But no, I suppose, look, one of the biggest stories out of the club in the last week was the announcement in collaboration with Fife's, the Harry Taff Mental Health and Wellbeing programme. And we had Shane Taff obviously on talking a little bit about it last week. So if you want to give a little bit of insight, and you know, I know from your perspective, from a personal point of view, naming it after Harry was something that just had to be done, wasn't it, you know?
Well, look, it's something that is close to everybody in Oriel Park. Harry was an amazing person, and he touched everybody in Oriel Park with his hijinks and his spirit and everything. And you know, I think everybody knows that Harry passed away to suicide in 2 years ago. And since the day it happened, we have been looking to, well, I have been looking to sort of honor his name and that sort of thing. And then, you know, I left, so that was put in the back burner. And so, you know, I've spoken with Derek Pepper, who, you know, through Shine, absolutely amazing person, and is so qualified and talks about, you know, the whole thing about mental health and well-being. Like, he's such an expert in it. And And our good friends in Fife's, Jerry and Emma, when I approached them about it, they just jumped at it. You know, they just and you know, they've come on board with a couple of things with the summer camps and that sort of stuff. And it's like everything. It's like what I said to you earlier on about, you know, being a community club. You can have all the community programs you want and all the mental health well-being programs, but if they don't make a difference, they're just box ticket. You know, and when Derek explained the Safe Talk workshops and that to us, you know, I think everybody in the room was just said, you know, this is just a great idea. You know, it's And for people who don't know, basically what that is, it's a four-hour workshop that held by the HSC, or Derek in this case, and it's for people who may come in contact with people who have mental health issues, or just to arm you in some way with recognizing telltale signs of people that may have. And basically, they're not telling you like you're going to cure them, but they're going to just tell you that how to deal with it, how to cope, and, you know, maybe just say to that guy or woman, you know, do you need a help? You might need to go and see your GP. Here's a bit of help for you. And that's basically all it is, you know. And that's, so what we want to do, we're having the first one in a couple of weeks. And I hope that a lot of our coaches, our underage coaches who come into contact with a lot of younger males or females, I hope that they'll be able to do that. I hope that people around the club, I hope that people in Fifes and other industries in the town will contact us and say, listen, we'd love to get on board with this. I already have a couple of people with a couple of businesses who say, yeah, they'd love to get on board with this, and actually send their supervisors to do the workshop, which is great, you know. And all we want to do is, you know, and this is how, when we got involved with Women's Aid at the start of the year, it was basically, you know, we give them the bucket collection and we done other stuff with them, but they said all they wanted out of us was to use our profile to increase their profile. And if we can do that with 10 different organizations in Dundalk Football Club, right, or in Dundalk, well then isn't it great that we're helping other people get their message out there? And that's all we want to do.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic to see. And, you know, I don't need to tell you obviously about my own involvement with heading the game, but it's great, you know, like you just said, we're using the profile of football to be able to promote mental health. Absolutely. Within the game, you know, and the generation that you're talking about, that younger generation, are the ones that need it more than anything, you know, because they're exposed to a lot more social media than any of us were. I'm sounding like an outfall. I'm sounding like you now, Martin, saying that, but you know, they're exposed to a lot more social media, and they're getting feedback a lot quicker than we ever got, you know. So so if we can,
I think social media, it has its use in that, but it's a dangerous evil as well, you know. And I've witnessed that in the last couple of weeks myself. But you know, look, as you say, I'm from a slightly different era. But what is really recognizable is the dangers of mental health and the lack of resources that's available to people who are struggling at the moment. And you know, we're not saying that we're going to cure you or we're going to help with the resources, but what we are going to say is that we're going to do our best to arm people in some way, if they come across it, you know, and if we can do that, that's all we can do. You know, we'd be very great. And if we help one person in that, by doing that, it's a project worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I always say as well. Well, look, Martin, I don't want to take up really any more of your time because I have to get away and pick the child up. But just if you want to wrap up, this has been brilliant, and I appreciate the time that you have given me because I know it's late back home.
I can't say no to you. Like, you know, if you rang me every week, I'd find it hard to say no, I can't do it.
You know? I know, yeah. But look, have you any message for the supporters that are listening, you know, with regards to the survey, with regards to the rest of the season as we wrap up?
Yeah, listen, I suppose the first thing we want to do is we want to thank everybody for the support. Like, the support we've got this year has been amazing. It would have been very easy for people to chuck in their interest at Dundalk Football Club. But I think what you've seen over the last, probably 15, 18 months is how important the football club is to the community and how important it is to the people of Dundalk. And we're very grateful that they've supported us for the last 12 months. And we know that, you know, it's going to be tough over the next couple of months over here. It's all right for you as big swingers and big money men over in Chicago, like, you know, but, you know, I think it could be tough for the next few months, and we'll all stick in together. And, you know, from the support point of view, it's been amazing. On the field, just continue to back Stevie. He's been doing a great job. Yeah, be patient. You know, everything's not going to come together in the one season. And I think people might be a wee bit naive to think that, but everybody around the club is you can see it in the performances. They're absolutely giving it everything. Everybody in the club is working hard to improve and make things better. And, you know, give us a wee bit of time and we'll get there. As for the survey, give yourself a bit of time. It's not a 2-minute job. You're not going to do it on your mobile phone in 2 minutes. We encourage everybody to sit down and take the survey, put a bit of time and effort into it, and you know, it'll give us an idea of where we're going and how we're going to get there going forward.
Brilliant, Martin. I appreciate your time. Thanks again.
You're very welcome. Good luck.
Well, look, Pingu, I think you've been coming in and out of Wi-Fi as you've been on your way home there. So, look, I suppose what was your take from Martin there? It seems like at least the club want to have an involvement from the fans and let them lead where we go, possibly.
Yeah, it looks, number one, it was quite an open and honest chat from Martin, you know, which is refreshing after what we've gone through in the last two seasons. But I think for me, it sounds like the club has a lot of plans, you know, but I think you're right with regards to the survey that they want to get support and involvement. And I think as a podcast, we've brought up loads of times that before the 1903 was ever established, you know, the big sticking point, and it came up loads of times in the conversation, was about the ground, about Oriel Park. And
yeah,
we all want to see a better Oriel Park, but I think we as supporters need to back it and back it with our pockets as much as an ownership group has to do that, you know. So I thought it was very interesting. He was a bit coy when I asked him about giving me a job, though not too impressive. but look,
we all are. Every time we have to talk to you, we're like, oh no, we can't find a reason for him to come back home.
That's a bit harsh there, Chris. Sorry, I'll jump on the pod and just save the day, Chris, and get these interviews sorted. Don't you worry about me.
You're a hero, Pat. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. No. I think you're right. I think it's we were calling for involvement and wanting to help drive this club in a direction. And to be fair to these owners, they said that they would do this, and then they are doing it now. You know, they want to listen to see where we go. And Martin did say that even the results of this survey, we'll put all that together and we'll present it back to everybody, so we all have an idea of what we'd like to do. Obviously, none of that's a given, but what we can do from there is formulate some sort of a plan, because I think, you know, Martin said it with yourself, and he said it before as well, that, you know, you could come up with committees and plans, and it's just, you know, theory on a piece of paper. It's not anything concrete. You know, we need to have a very finite plan. And Pingu, you touched on it there as well. And I think this kickstarted nearly our original conversation, that us as fans have a big part to play in this. And we look at what Sligo Rovers do as a fan-backed club, and they're always adding more to the ground. They're doing fundraising all the time. And I think you're right, Pingu. I think that's probably something we're going to have to do. We're going to have to roll in behind, and we're going to have to be part of. We might need to be part of an initial plan to get out. We don't have massive deep pockets that we're building the stadium or anything like that, but we will have to be part of the plan that kickstarts something. We make small moves now, but that could be down to just, like you say, the supporters group, us as individual fans, and that's the role we can play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't know if any of you listened to LOI Central's interview with Stephen Kenny this week, where he was saying what he would like in an ideal world is every ground in Ireland, in the League of Ireland, to be four-sided, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, and I could be completely naive to this, but Oriel Park doesn't look like it would be too hard to make it a four-sided ground, you know. I don't think it has to be we would love it to be state-of-the-art, but I don't think it has to be state-of-the-art to make it a four-sided ground, you know. Mm-hmm. You've got a little bit of space behind the town end. Give a little plug there, and then there's a lot of space behind the Carrick Road end. Their podcast is shite though. but you know, like, to me, obviously there's a financial cost, but it doesn't seem like it would be too hard to actually make it happen, you know. But it does. I think what needs to happen is you need to get everybody all on the same page, and hopefully the start of this with this survey from the club, that's going to be a big factor to it, you know. And hopefully we see something in our lifetime, you know, because Oriel Park hasn't changed from as long as I remember. I know Donald's about 15 years older than me. I don't think it's changed since he remembers either. Like,
I remember the puddle. Do you remember the puddle? That used to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, thing, we were there for the beat top campaign Americans and things like that.
It's the greatest thing those Americans ever done was clear that puddle.
But Pingu, you remember the beat top campaign of getting European football there and getting the new seats put in and things like that. Like, that was pretty much backed by the fans that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was all, it was, you bought your tickets in advance, didn't you? You bought your tickets at the start of the season for a game that you didn't know who you were going to get. And I think based off of the money of that, they were able to install those seats, you know. So things could be done. It's the club has a community feel, and the club has had a community feel, you know, for a few years now. And just, like, again, you don't want to harp on at different regimes and different people that were there before. But during all our success under Stephen Kenny, like, people say the European money could have been used to renovate the ground. But to me, I feel like the club at that time didn't capitalise on the support that, you know, the swell of support that the club had then, and do more stuff, you know, and get the fans more involved. So I feel like the people like Martin that are back in this time have kind of learned from that, probably from being on the outside looking in last year. You know, they've learned how important the supporters are. And I think with something like the ground, a redevelopment of Oriel, which is, in fairness, that's what I'd be in favour of too, rather than going somewhere else. I think they've just learned their lesson that they need to have supporters' voices have to be heard, but they need supporter involvement in anything that is done in the future, you know.
Yeah. Look, and I think that's it. And it's, like I say, it's great for steps for the likes of the 1903 forming and having their committee there. They might end up playing a pretty huge part in whatever this next phase will be for the club. I think Martin mentioned it's probably just going to be as important what happens off the pitch as it does on for this club to grow. And it feels like, and I think Bingo, you mentioned it, you know, when we were watching it on telly last week, it didn't look great. The aesthetics don't look great. If you're an outsider looking at that game, you're probably thinking, you know, would I be interested in going to watch that? Probably not based on what's there. And we've seen some fantastic football at time. The last thing you want is lack of facilities, lack of everything else being an opportunity not to bring in more people into this league. And that's, you know, that's been the rod that RTE have hit, the, you know, the reason for not having too many live games is that, you know, we grounds don't look great in the back. So there's huge work to be done in all of that. Yeah, I think that's, I think you're right on that.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I've had to watch Dundalk games for the last 7 years on telly. So I've seen it when it's full, and when it's full, you can kind of get away with it. You know what I mean? Like that backdrop when stand side is full and you've got people behind the goals, it looks all right. But then if there's 500 people less, you know, in the ground on a night, it looks terrible, you know, and that's a small number in the grand scheme of things. And you would think then if you had a, you know, if you had improvements made, maybe on behind, as I say, behind the turn end, wink, wink again. But if you had improvements made in those areas, rather than just those 500 coming, you might get 750 coming, you know, you might have more people in attendance as well, which would help. But as much flack as RTE take, when if they pick a game where Oriel Park's not going to be full, it doesn't look great, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's simple little things as well, don't like the, you know, disabled access area, you know, at the side of a pitch where someone could get hit with a football or something. It's not ideal. Like these, you know, if we have an opportunity to move forward as a club, these are the things, you know, it's all about inclusion nowadays. And you know, Pingu was just talking to Martin about, you know, having an open day in Oriel Park and, you know, getting groups in and getting to use Oriel Park and the name Dundalk Football Club. It should be about, you know, everybody having equal access to this and everyone having, you know, able to come to the game in a relatively safe environment.
Yeah, like you look like some of the things that Martin mentioned there, like the about being able to bring families, like bring a few kids and have a nice safe section to sit in, and you know there's a lot of things like that, and it all just comes down to the facilities that are available. But also, just I know he pointed out the other grounds need updating as well, and they all do. And this is the thing of a lot of people that clamour for the grounds to be, or the games to be on RTE again. And like Pinky was saying, when the stadiums are empty, none of them look great. Yep. But it also brings up the thing. I know we talked about this before, but the if there's a great goal scored somewhere and it gets shown up on social media and it gets a load of views, people are looking at how good the goal is, but they're also looking at how awful all of the facilities are and how they don't want to go to that ground. Like, it's we need two things to move forward at the same time. We need to improve the facilities and then try and get more people hooked in. Like, and that goes with like bringing more groups of people into the grounds and making them feel more not welcome, because they like, there's not really a, I don't know, there wouldn't be a group that wouldn't be welcome in Oriel, but just making them feel safe and making them feel like they have been thought about when decisions are being made about like where, say, like disabled sections or family sections in the stand and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot to get through. And I just want to just say, I know Pingu's gone, but Steph left in the middle of it because he was tired of the in-jokes. And he's just gone because he's going to go meet his friends in low places. That's probably going to be the last one, but the last guard person. But that Steph did leave, just in case.
That's I think this is on the way down the road, so I'm pretty clued in to most. I suppose, Donald, the other thing that Martin brought up and was talking to Pingu about was, you know, something that COVID didn't help. But in particular, you know, we talked about a disconnect back to the community and things like that. Again, with the club, you know, we're seeing 3-4 different initiatives already from the club, from the season opener to, I suppose, the Harry Taff mental health and wellness program coming up. It's amazing how, you know, I think his line might have been, as soon as you talk to you know, anybody about potential sponsorship, the first thing they all mention is community. And one thing we were absolutely clamming for was get our community back involved in the club. And it's not going to be a quick fix or anything like that, but you can see the you know, green roots kind of starting to come through of what that could look like. And it's great to see the likes of Fife's back involved with something as well, you know, a company who is synonymous with the successful years in particular over the past wee while in Oriel Park.
I think that's the thing. I mean, we on the field stuff is obviously incredibly important, and we're not going to pretend that it's not, but the importance of the football club in the community is absolutely gigantic as well. Like, we've talked about, I don't know how many times that we've talked about how important it is and how like how damaging it was the last couple of years, and how people were just drifting away, and there weren't these initiatives, COVID did happen, and it was something that we should remember was going on at the same time as previous ownership and stuff. So, but yeah, like we've talked about this a good bit as well, and I talked about this a good bit with lots of people, but the stuff on the pitch is a bonus if the club continues to grow in the way it's growing and could like become a, like the pillar of the community that it should be and that we all want it to be. And initiatives like the ones that they've announced over the last couple of weeks they're fantastic. And I think Brian Garton talked about that in towards the end of last year. It's not so much about winning. It's being proud of your football club and proud of what your football club represents. And on a night like tonight, when, it was an absolutely brutal night. With a little bit of time and a little bit of perspective, it's like, right, I know that was a horrendous night, but at least I know the club is moving forward, and I know the club is trying their best to improve on lots of different levels. It's not just like the on-the-pitch stuff is one thing, but yeah, it's about being proud of your football club, and we can be proud of the football club when they run initiatives like the ones that they have been running.
Yeah, look, and there's a mention there about, you know, the thing that Sligo do, you know, with their annual draws, and, you know, Finn Harps have been hugely successful in big draws too. We've seen Lough GA, you know, help to acquire the grounds they have for the new county ground whenever that more funding becomes available to continue that project. So it's amazing. I think this survey that's come out, and Frank Carlin's just back in just to talk about it there. It's, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity. We've all been clamoring to be able to tell back to the club what we'd like to happen. And here's actually an opportunity, you know, where the club goes after this. We can kind of say, well, this isn't either what we wanted or what we didn't want, you know, but at least you've had your say. I think there was times under the previous ownership that we were kind of a second thought. We felt like a second thought is probably the best way to put it. And, you know, as we're mentioning at a time of success that, you know, maybe the ground got left behind. And Pingu was mentioned about, you know, we didn't galvanize as supporters, but here's an opportunity to be involved with a direction of the football club. We now have a supporters club. We're actually probably off the pitch in a better place in a weird way. And obviously far better on the pitch also. So sort of like there's in a bad night for results for ourselves, there is some positives to take where we are with this. And I think that's probably something to remember. And, you know, we're probably masking over poor results for the past few weeks and saying, yeah, but, you know, remember where we were and it was terrible. It's like being given the keys to the candy shop and be told, here, you can have stuff in there, and then be told, oh, actually, just stand outside and watch these other three teams in Europe outside the window, please. You know?
Yeah, I wonder how, like, if there's a section on the survey that would be like, will you be disappointed if we don't get European football? I don't know if that's going to be in there, but I think I can understand what everybody's answer would be. I think what we wanted, I think, from, and we'll be really interested to see what way the survey goes about dealing with stuff like this. It's like we wanted, or I made the point about having some sort of legacy, like some sort of recognition mm-hmm. of how successful the club has been. And I thought, like, when things were going backwards last year, you would never know that we were a team that had been in the Europa League twice, you know, on all the trophies that we'd won. And I know that there was work done, like, with the training facilities and stuff like that, and that looks great. But for a fan arriving at the ground, and I don't even know what that is. I don't know if that means putting the stand at both ends, in the town end and Carrick Road end. I don't even know if that's what that is. But it'd be interesting if there's something in the survey where you're able to say, like, what would you like to improve other than that? You know, like, what what could you add to make Oriel just feel like the home ground of one of the most successful football clubs in Irish football history? You know, like, it's I just think there was an opportunity to do that, and for one reason or another we didn't really fully capitalize on it. So hopefully moving forward we can improve on what's there now. And like the survey is going to say, like, to listen to the fans and see what people want, and then see what we can work out then after that. So it's a great idea. People are always going to want to see a follow up on.
Yeah.
And again, you're looking at if the results are all scattergun and 10% want this and 15% want that. Like, I don't know how they're going to work all that out. But in theory, it's a good start, you know?
Yeah. But look, it's better off having, you know, multiple options of what people would prefer rather than, you know, and Pingu brought it up, you know, we had a stadium committee, and I know Brendan Ogle was part of that, as part of the 1903, and you know, he was calling for meetings and it just wasn't happening. You know, whether the people who were on it had just had no interest, or it was impossible to make work, we don't know. So hopefully we go a step further down the line now with this. And I think at a time where we're seeing Finn Harps with, you know, the Donegal Community Stadium, which will eventually happen, we're seeing the redevelopment now of Daly Mount Park happening, you know, and a fourth stand in Tallaght Stadium. We've got the Brandywell has got an uplift over the past few years. There's a number of grounds, and I know Martin has mentioned them in that piece there as well. And, you know, like, I was in Heading the Game Park tonight, like, these are a mile off how they should be. And we're unfortunately part of that as well. And to grow football in this country, that's what we need to do. Like, if the streaming platform is putting more eyes on our league, we have to increase this. And you know, we're all talking about academy structures, and that's how we're going to go because of Brexit. Players are going to stay here in the league for longer, and we're seeing loans and loan deals from guys from the UK coming over here. You know, like, if you're Hibs and you're looking at you know, to see how your players are getting on, and you're looking at facilities, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, is it worth bringing lads in here? Because, you know, if there's that poor, is there potential these players are going to get injured? I'm not loaning them.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, and that's it. And then it's, there's also the thing we've been talking about possibly for the past while of English coming in lowballing with, you know, offers of money and things. There could be a perception from the outside of, well, look at the state of your ground. I'm not giving you as big money for players because you can't even look after an own stadium. There's better stadia in, you know, League Two and national leagues in England.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's the perception. Like, we know the quality of football, and we've seen our teams play against other teams around Europe in like the Scottish League. Scottish League seems like the most obvious one to compare it to. That, like, aside from the top two in Scotland, is there much between those teams and our teams? But you look at the facilities, you look how it looks on television, you look at the way it's presented, and it's not presented like that here at all. And I know RTE don't do a great job of it. I'm not pretending that they don't, but sometimes they are dealt a dud hand where, you know, they go up if the last game of the season is on in Donegal, and they have to go up and show, you know, absolutely pissing rain, it's just going to look terrible, you know. And there's, not to pick on Finn Harps, but there is a few stadiums around the country where there's just nothing you can do. They're not going to look good on TV, and it needs to be addressed league wide. It needs to be addressed by somebody other. It's not going to be RTE. Like, as much as we can look after our own, it's like the rising tide, whatever. It's everybody has to get better. It's like, it feels like we're going to be talking about this for a long, long time. You know, like, we might do our own place, but Hendigan Park will still look the same unless they get more, you know, investment or whatever, plans change and stuff. So,
yeah, I think this is a bigger conversation that needs to be led by, you know, the FAI and the governing bodies with regards financing from, you know, Sports Ireland grants, things like this. You know, we need to open this up, and we've been talking about how we need to invest into academy structures. We need to invest in academy structures. We also need to invest in stadia around the country, match day experience, and we need to somehow increase the levels of what we can offer people, because your option now is to sit at home in your lovely, it might not be a warm house with the cost of heating these days, but you're sitting in your house you know, watching TV or whatever, to get people to want to go out and go to, we can't be continuing to offer second rate facilities anymore. And, you know, like Frank has in there saying, and he's right, you know, supporters are going to need to manage their expectations, because at the result of this survey isn't going to be, okay, let's build a new stadium, you know, or let's knock Oriel Park, and by the time you roll up for match one of next season, it's a brand new stadium. That's not going to happen. And he's absolutely right. You know, it's going to take long term. It's going to take massive funding for this. Like, you've just mentioned 2-3 stadiums there now, and you know, they all need the same funding as we do, and there isn't enough money to go around right now. No. So this does land at our door, and you know, I think we need to make sure that we're at the frontier of this, because like Pingu mentioned, you know, this group of owners may not be around forever.
Yeah.
But we will.
Yeah. And our goal should be that if we qualify for Europe, we can play as many games in Oriel as possible, because that was the absolute killer of the European runs, of having to go to Tala for the games and not be able to play them in Oriel. And like, sure enough, the league does need that investment and different stadiums need updating, but we obviously can't look after that in the short term thing of, like, if we qualify for Europe next year, what do we need to do to get more games on? And like, if it's small incremental changes along the way, then like, that's how we should go about it. But the goal, the short term goal in that sense to me has to be that if we did qualify next year, do we how many games can we play?
See, now he goes over budget, pal, not a hope. But you know, Derek Walsh has a good point there as well. You know, like we're talking about if there's only 100 and roughly, he reckons around 140 fans paying €15 per month on the club patron, and that's down from 300 when Ifert started. So if fans can't or won't support the club financially, they can't complain about the facilities. There's an element of truth in there too, you know. Like yeah. I think his point is that, you know, you can complain all you want, but unless you're willing to help, and unfortunately it's helped financially on a lot of this. Like I know the 1903 met on Monday, and it was about getting other people involved, getting different groups involved to how they can possibly help the club in the future. Like it's little moves like this sometimes that things can come from, and possibly groups of supporters from different areas that we normally watch in Oriel Park may not always talk to each other, but then you find out that, you know, someone's got vast experience in different areas. Like it's little things like that. You can be amazed at sometimes what can happen. I also love Gavin Moran's thing where I've gone off on a tangent about facilities, and he thinks I'm taking away from the fact that we were brutal tonight. and he does have a point in that as well.
Did you see the first like 35 minutes of absolute drudgery and horrible stuff that we had to get anyway? Sorry, yeah, they were beaten tonight, and they were absolutely awful in the second half.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of this talk, you know, and the reason we're talking about now is because it's something we've brought up, you know, episode after episode before of where we go. And I feel like we have a chance for a little bit of an input of a direction the club's going to take. And it's just important to mention it here, get as many people registered as we can for the survey, and let's get as many voices back to the club as we can. Because, you know, we call for input, here's a chance for input, then it's up to the club what they do. But on the field matters, you know, as well, you know, European football and financially what that entails also sets us off on a different direction. It sets Skip off on a different direction of what sort of a budget he has for next year. And that's more short term, you know, where we are. And look, the reality of tonight was the benefit that we got from that Sligo game, you know, we're getting the 3 points, that's just been wiped out.
Yeah.
It's been wiped out in one night. We, you know, even the hold out for a draw there, we still would have been 3 points and two goals better off than Pats. You know, now it's two points and two goals. Yeah. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts, but we, you know, from listening to yourselves on the way down the road there, and I think you've probably hit a lot on the head. There seems to be a massive leadership problem at the moment, you know, from missing key personnel regularly in this team. And that's probably what had us in such a good, at a good level at the start of the season, that we had very little injuries. We knew we had a small squad, but we had very little injuries, and we had a number of key players, key leaders right the way throughout the team. And I think that is missing at the moment, and we're very fragile at the moment. And as a result, it only takes, we've seen it against Wexford, that when a team comes and goes at us, we don't seem to have the players, whether it's that mix of young lads that's here and some on loan and stuff like that they just haven't been through this before, and they need a vital leader on the pitch to just, you know, pull them out of the trenches literally and say, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
That is an element, I think.
Yeah. And we did say about the injuries, and I asked Pinger and then he disappeared, about whether how much we can, or how long we can look at like people missing and be like, that's why we're not winning these games. And it's like, and the night like tonight, I'm like, I'm not like, we're missing big players, I absolutely get that, but the situation that we got ourselves in, we have to win that game. And it's now like we can, it's like looking at the micro and the macro, whatever. Like,
yeah,
the injuries and everything are going to have a big say over a big stretch of games. But in that situation that we were in tonight, we had to win that game. We put ourselves in front twice away to UCD. Like, we have to win that game. And maybe it is a leadership thing of not being able to, like, finish the thing off. But it's, like, 2-1 up with 10 minutes to go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody, no, Jesus, I shouldn't say just anybody should be able to finish that game off. But we shouldn't need Pat Hooban and Robbie Benson on the pitch at that stage to finish that game off. It does feel a little bit like it's been thrown away. Now, all it will take, I'm still convinced of this, all it'll take is one big result.
Yeah, do you know, I think it was Steph who said earlier in the show, you know, there's been games, in particular, I'm thinking of ones in Oriel Park, that, you know, we didn't look like we had any sort of a stranglehold on a match, but it just took a big tackle from a big player. And suddenly everybody was like, whoa, hang on a second. We all need to be put in this intensity, this energy. Like, not that the guys aren't, they're not that they're not willing to or anything like that. I just think sometimes it just takes a certain type of player to go over and beyond what's required of them, that, you know, everyone else kind of takes stock and said, you know what, if he's putting his life on the line for this game and for this club, I need to be doing the exact same. And I think that was an element of that missing. And that's where I'm talking about, where the key players and injuries, like I say, it's not all an excuse, but over a course of, say, these last five games, I haven't seen those elements enough.
Yeah.
Where we've been underperforming, but a big incident at a certain time in a game, and we flipped as a team and really gone at somebody. We look like we're plodding along, and we're doing exactly what Skip wants us to do, but it just takes one person out of position or one mistake. We're getting punished for that, and then the heads are dropping slightly. Let's be fair, they are dropping slightly, and I just feel that we just need something, whether that's a goal, a tackle, something in a game, that everyone says, do you know what, we're done to a football club, and we're in a position here, to be still here in Europe. Let's bloody fight for this. And I would feel that little bit it could be missing. And I don't know how you fix it. I don't know how Skip fixed that. Yeah. Whether that's a change. And there was talk of, I just talk about Brian Gartland. Could he come back in? It depends on his level of fitness. And I think that's the element of Robbie Benson as well, which is why we're seeing him come in at times and not at times, is how important is Friday in Waterford now. Because if our league position is under threat, the cup is now one of our best opportunities to get Europe, because fourth in the league is not guaranteed this year, in particular with Derry and Shamrock Rovers drawing each other. Pats are already out. Pats now have 2 weeks off. You know, we have a league game to prepare for. We have a cup match to prepare for on Friday, so it's not easy.
No,
but you can't go down to Waterford going, well, let's just shut up shop and you know, make ourselves hard to beat, because we need to win it.
Yeah,
we don't need extra time. We don't need more injuries.
No, they just it feels like they just, like you said, they need a big moment. They need something. Like, it wouldn't matter if it was a cup game or if it was a League Cup game or a Leinster Senior Cup game. Whatever the next game was, they have to get something. They have to. And if we think of the, like, the last time there was one of those big moments was at home to Derry when Hooban scored. And it's like, that's.
Yeah.
That was a moment, you know. And then they won the next game in Dalymount, and we were on a roll. And then I think it was it the game in Tala after that, then that just, for whatever reason, just absolutely not stuffing out of us, and they haven't recovered. But yeah, like, geez, you think of the biggest moments of the season, and the players that provided them aren't on the pitch enough, you know, or one of them's not there, but they're not, like, it's it's a worry that like somebody, but it is like they need to be, I guess the manager could look at it and be like, look, someone else has to stand up. Someone else has to do this. Yeah. This is an opportunity.
That's it. Yeah.
For somebody else to stand up and just give us the kick up the arse that we need. I somehow feel worse than when we started.
You're on a plateaued and now you come down the other side.
Yeah, okay. And I am rocketing down the other side of that little bit of high I had earlier on.
well, on that note, let's start wrapping stuff up fairly quick here. I should just have the league table. Unfortunately, we're going to have to go through it for ourselves. So look, Shamrock Rovers obviously still top. They don't play till Sunday, am I right?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah. So they stay top on 56 points. Derry, after a 1-0 win tonight, are behind on 55 points. And then ourselves still sitting third on 53 points with Pats 2 points behind with a game in hand. Drop back then of 10 points back that to Sligo Rovers. And I think that's the other thing is, you know, now that we're talking about Fort not, you know, being guaranteed, and it's probably guaranteed European football for I don't know how long, because there's always been one of the top two, if not top three, still in the cup at this time of the year. So it's a real, it could be a real blow to finish fourth and not get it if that was to happen. To wrap up the bottom half of the league, then I suppose Bows behind that on 36 points, Shells 33, and Drogheda after a loss 2-0 to Pats tonight in Hedna Game Park on 31 points. UCD off bottom on 19 points after a win against the Town, and Finn Harps are bottom. I'll remove that quickly so you don't have to look at it anymore. Look, Donald, Gavin's probably just gave us it's a tough night for everyone, and he's right. It's not the result we needed. Massive game in the cup now next week. That is huge. And then after that, I'm right in saying is a loud derby. So they're coming thick and fast. If it's any benefit to anyone still watching or listening, will be a minute silence at the end of this broadcast. We'll see. You can hang on for the minute silence if you want for yourself. That's no problem, John. But Drogheda were, you know, played most of the game against 10 men tonight and lost 2-0. So that's, you know, they were very, very poor tonight. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that's the Drogheda which turns up in Oriel Park in 2 weeks' time, because Lord knows we could do with some sort of a boost right now. Look, on a night of poor results for ourselves in down in the bowl and in Hedna the Game Park tonight, it's just been pretty brutal, and I had to sit through that. Nobody needed that. Look, we'll always hold hope. Important conversations, I think, with Martin and where we go. Everyone register for the survey if you can. And let's hope for better times when we get out of this. Have you any way you can think to end this, Donal?
I got the perfect one.
Go for it.
If tomorrow never comes, we've qualified for Europe.